Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. Certainly thankful that you've been able to join us this morning. I always look forward to these opportunities to be together, especially as we have the opportunity to study through the New Testament and coming up very quickly on the conclusion of that study.
Yeah, man.
And that just means we're coming up very quickly on the close of 2016 as well. And that has certainly drifted by very quickly. Mm-hmm. But we're thankful that you've been able to join us. I'm your host this morning, Ryan Smithy, joined right alongside Chip Horton.
Hey, hey, hey.
And we are enjoying a little warmer day here in Northeast Texas. We've had a little warm-up before we go diving back into some of the cooler weather once again. But invite your attention this morning to Revelation chapter 9. We're going to be there in just a moment. Revelation chapter 9 is going to be our topic of study for this morning as we get into the woes as we continue through these seals that are being opened. And, you know, I think about the idea of these seals, and, you know, there's a number of ideas that come to my mind, and I think about the faithfulness of God, that these are things that are going to come to pass. We don't have to wonder or question whether these things were going to be so. God was writing these ultimately to comfort the New Testament Christians that were suffering, and they could be reminded God is in control.
Right.
I also think of the idea of that very same concept as this is bringing comfort. Why? Because ultimately, truth and righteousness is going to be avenged. You know, there's quite a bit of the book of Revelation where one might stop and say, it seems like sometimes good triumphs. Sometimes truth seems to be pushed down. And yet, ultimately, in the end, God, truth, righteousness is going to prevail. And you know, I've often related it to a sports team. Somebody at the end of the game is going to win. And in this particular account, we know which team's going to win. God's team's going to win. And so what side will you be on? Are you going to decide, I want to be on the winning team, or am I going to be on the losing team? And you can certainly know which team that is. And so would you like to be on that winning side? Other thoughts come to mind, but those are certainly some comforts that we are reminded of as we read through these. And so we continue the idea of trumpets and woes here combined with the opening of those seals, events of things that are coming to pass or are going to come to pass even shortly that are being revealed unto John. And so as we come into chapter 9, I have it labeled at the top here. It's trumpet 5 and 6, which is woe number 1 and 2. And I think sometimes we get some of those. You got the seals that are opening. You got the trumpets that are sounding. You've got woes that are being spoken forth. Certainly a lot that's going on. But that's the swiftness, if you will, of this book as well. We quickly go from one image to another. We quickly go from one scene to another. And yet what I'm reminded of here in chapter 9 is, again, there is a punishment that is going to be coming upon the unrighteous. There is a judgment that is going to be poured out upon them. And so what we're going to look at, and we'll just break this into two pieces. We'll start in verse 1 through 12. That's going to be the fifth trumpet, the first woe, the locust from the pit. And so we will begin there and then look at the second woe in the latter half of our study. And so, Chip, if you will, let's just go ahead, chapter 9 of the book of Revelation, and we'll start in verse 1 through 12.
All right, 1 through 12. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, And there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth had power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were, as it were, crowns like gold. And their faces were as the faces of men. And they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates as it were breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of a chariot, of chariots of many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. One woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter.
Okay, and so the idea here of a woe, of a pronouncement of judgment that is coming to pass, even though it seems maybe at times that, yes, good may seem to triumph, nevertheless, God is still in control. He still knows those things that are happening. There's still going to be an answering for the life that man has chosen to live. And so those that have been fighting against his people and his cause, those that have been fighting against truth and righteousness, here begin to feel some of the wrath, if you will, of God's anger, of his judgment. And so it is with this this first woe that is sounded forth. We're told here, going back to verse 1, this fifth angel is going to sound. Here he brings forth his trumpet. He is trumpeting forth, and it was a star that fell from heaven. You know, Chip, one of the things that certainly came to mind as you were reading those things is, if you have forgotten that the book of Revelation is a book of signs, this chapter, among many of the others, ought to be a reminder of that.
Sure enough.
I mean, this is the makings of a good nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you have a more imaginative mind, I mean that in a good way, than I do. I think you have much more of a visual mind than I do. But even still, trying to sit back and play these scenes in your head, think of what this would have looked like, mm-hmm. and you see all of these things happening. But I appreciate it, as you were reading, even stressing that word as.
Mm-hmm.
These were things that John is trying to relate. He's seeing all these things, and he's, man, that looks like, that reminds me of, it's as. It wasn't necessarily these things. It's not those descriptions, mm-hmm. but it was something like that. Yeah, that's the thought that came to his mind. And so here, again, we have this apocalyptic language. We have this imagery, these signs that are being images used to bring forth a meaning. Stars often stand for great powers, mm-hmm. some kind of significant force. And here he says, I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth, and to him is going to be the key of this bottomless pit. He has been given some authority there over this bottomless pit. Again, some have suggested this is even Satan, that he is going forth, wielding the power that he has, seeking the destruction. But even this power that's been given unto this one is limited.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain restrictions that God is allowing certain things, not allowing other things. And so this star that has fallen is operating by divine permission. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always mean that this is necessarily, if you will, to use his language, what God wants or desires, but it is what he is allowing. Mm-hmm. And so certainly, as you look through all of the book of Revelation, God doesn't want the destruction or the hurt of anyone. Mm-hmm. He wants all men to be saved.
Right.
That's his will. That's his desire. But he is going to allow men to make their choices, their decisions, and that's going to have eternal consequences.
Does that remind you of Job at all?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way he allowed Satan to touch him just to a degree. He said, only you do this and don't do that.
Right.
See the same thing reflected here, I think.
Right, because we're going to see those restrictions. It's a key, again, that represents that authority, I think, there of Matthew 16:18. To Peter specifically, but then to the rest of the apostles, I give unto you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And that was an authority. It was a divine authority, not unlimited, but he could use those keys for God to do God's will. And this one here is also going to use these keys in the scope of what authority has been allowed into his hands. And so that star, as it were, that fell from heaven is going to open, verse 2, this bottomless pit. Upon opening it, smoke and billows are going to come forth out of it. It's going to cover the earth, as it were, in a dark, this dark smoke. Notice the air was darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. Again, if we attach this maybe with the forces of Satan, then there is a darkness of sin we could talk about, a spiritual darkness that is going forth into the world. It spreads as wicked influence spreads in the world. How many times do we talk about the sinful state as a darkened state? I think of Peter there as he talks about, you have been turned from darkness into God's marvelous light. That's the kind of darkness that I see pictured here. Here is that star that has fallen. He's come to do harm upon the earth, and that influence is being spread. And so that's the images there that I see is starting here. And now out of that smoke. It's not bad enough. The pit's open. The smoke's come forth. It's dark in the earth. That influence is spread. But now out of the smoke, locusts are going to come upon the earth. And unto them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. And so here's some damage that they can go forth and do. They are locusts with a mission. They have power. They have authority, once again, to work. We are not unfamiliar with locusts. In the biblical language.
No, sir.
Locust, as part of the 10 plagues, Exodus chapter 10. Locust, as part of that prophecy even of Joel, speaks of the destruction that had come upon the land by locust. There in Exodus, we have confidence we're speaking of that literal animal of the locust plague. You go over into something like Joel, and I think you have some room to question. Was this some army? Was it some force that had brought this kind of destruction? Was it a literal animal, the literal locust that had come in such a plague and brought this destruction? I think you're open to some idea of question there as to what exactly that is. Well, here the locusts, again, are going to be used in a symbol of judgment. They're going forth as a power of destruction, a power to bring harm upon the face of the earth. And notice, though, verse 4, it is a limited power. That's something, again, that brings hope throughout this book. I go all the way back to Revelation 2 and verse 10. You're going to have tribulation for 10 days. Well, to some, that's discouraging. To others, they might look at it, and it's that reminder, this isn't going to last forever.
Right, limited.
There is some limitation here. There is some time at which this is going to be brought to an end. Mm-hmm. Well, such is true here. This is a fearful image, but there is a limitation as to what's going to be accomplished. Verse 4, it was commanded them they should not hurt the grass of the earth, nor neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. Mm-hmm. Now it's those that are not living in righteousness. Now it's those that are not living faithful to God. They're the ones, if you will, that have a target on their head, that are going to be harmed, are going to be hurt. Again, the locust goes forth. What is he going for? The green grass, the green thing, the green tree. And yet that's what this locust is limited from. Mm-hmm. It's not a physical destruction that he is going to be bringing, but rather it is a spiritual destruction, destruction upon the non-Christian, if you will, those who have rejected Christ, those who have even fought against his people. Those are the ones that are going to be afflicted and bring this harm on. And so now what are they doing? They're paying paying a price for the choices that they have made.
That's right.
They have gone into idolatry, falsehood, error, and now they're paying a judgment for those choices. Mm-hmm. We cannot continue to fight against God and pretend that nothing is going to happen.
That's right.
Habakkuk continually comes to mind throughout this chapter. You know, Habakkuk looked and he said, "What's going on, God?" To paraphrase loosely, what's going on? You haven't brought any consequences on the people, and so it's almost as if they're thinking this sin is allowed and it can continue. And God says, "In my time, I will bring judgment because I've prepared the Babylonian people." And Habakkuk staggers back and he says, "Wait a minute, you're using what?"
Right.
And he says, "I will use my tools in my time to accomplish my purposes." And Habakkuk's going to come away with a greater reverence for God. To a degree, I see that happening here in Revelation 9. Mm-hmm. All of this evil has been allowed, but God says it hasn't gone unnoticed. There's going to be an answering. There's going to be a judgment for the choices that people have made.
Right.
And further limitation, verse 5, it was given to them that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. Again, it's pointing to the fact they do not have unlimited power. They're going to make it rough on people. This is not going to be a pleasant time. But this particular image that's brought forth here is not going to destroy man. It's going to make it very difficult for them. Mm-hmm. They're going to go through some period of suffering here. Again, numbers mean something. 5 here, I would suggest to you, these 5 months would indicate there is a definiteness and also a completeness. Mm. There is a time within which these things are going to happen. It's going to be as according to God's will or his wishes within this limitation. But nevertheless, they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man. Now, I consider myself fortunate. I've never been struck by a scorpion. I've come close. I will always remember the day that I opened a newspaper out of a mailbox in a car, and a scorpion dropped into my lap.
Oh, my.
That car, fortunately, I wasn't driving, but that car quickly came to a stop.
Oh,
that will bring you a surprise, but I didn't get stung. But I have heard that is a burning, stinging sensation that one does not want to experience. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea here. There is a great hurt. There is a harm that's going to come. It's not going to bring death, but it is going to hurt them. It is going to affect them in some way. And so some kind of intense pain here, even so much, verse 6, that they would desire to die, but they cannot find a way out.
Again, sounds like Job, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Remember his wife, curse God and die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was in anguish.
And throughout their questioning, why was the day of my birth even allowed? You know, why was I brought forth for this? Mm. They're trying to find a way out. Some make a connection here, again, of wickedness. how easy it is to get caught up in wickedness. Mm-hmm. How easy it is to get caught up in the temptations of the world, and then it's difficult to get out.
Yeah.
How many have started down a road and they didn't realize how long that road, how rough that road was going to be, and they have a hard time getting off?
Mm-hmm.
Here, these even are going to seek death, but they will not find it. Death, it says, is going to flee from them. And so a suffering worse, in their minds at least, even than physical death. And how did they appear? And the shape of verse 7 of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. Again, I think of medieval times, maybe, where you have the horses with their masks on, sometimes even horses with armor themselves that were prepared unto battle. And they were going forth. They on their heads were like crowns of gold. Their faces were as the faces of men. You know, in a sense, one has pointed out here that it can be said that those in sin are at war with themselves. There is a battle that is going forth. And these are pictured as having these crowns on their head like unto gold. One has pointed out crowns often stand for authority. In this case, it is much of a pseudo-authority, a pseudo-victory, a false victory. Again, wickedness might triumph for a time, but ultimately it's going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
It said, again, you know, sometimes we don't necessarily want to try to assign a value and a meaning to every little detail that might be given, but again, human faces may well indicate intelligence.
Could very well, yeah.
Satan here is using intelligence. He's using the wisdom in that sense as that he has to go forth to deceive, to corrupt, to try to do all that he can to destroy men.
Mm-hmm.
And even here, this destruction of those that are, quote-unquote, as part of his force. He knows what they ultimately face, and that is destruction. And it's interesting, as you consider verse 9, think about who opened the pit. Who allowed these locusts to go forth? If it is that star that has fallen is indeed representative of Satan, notice that it is Satan that is releasing this force, sin, upon the earth. It's touted as pleasurable. But here we see the real results of it. Satan releases this force even knowing the harm and the destruction and the hurt that ultimately is going to come. And it's a reminder, I think, of a great contrast. Here is God that ultimately seeks man's good. Here is Satan that pretends to seek man's goodwill and his pleasure, but ultimately he knows the end. He knows the consequences.
Mm.
And yet he still does it. He still brings that destruction. And so he's catching people up. Perhaps that's the idea of verse 8. They had hair as the hair of women, their teeth as the teeth of lions. The teeth, power to devour and to destroy. Some have suggested here the hair of women, subjection to Satan.
Hmm.
That these were the ones, hair of women, as 1 Corinthians, I'm drawing some blanks there, but maybe about chapter 10, chapter 11, where it talks about that hair as a symbol of submission unto their husbands.
Hmm.
Perhaps that's the idea, that they are here under subjection. Here's a personal question that I've often had. Is that hair of women the attractiveness and the allurement of sin?
That'd be a good point.
That which allures, draws you in, but ultimately is going to destroy you, going to hurt you. That's an apt picture of me to sin. It appeals, it seems attractive, but ultimately what it is doing is destroying and killing.
Kind of reminds me of Samson and Delilah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure she was, you know, beautiful to look upon. That's the kind of women that he, you know, loved to be around.
It must have been. I mean, how sometimes we look at Samson there and we think, how dense. I'm trying to be respectful there, yeah. But must you have been to not realize the trap that she kept putting him in? Mm. Additionally, this description, this breastplate, as it were, breastplates of iron. Here's a strong armor. The sound of their wings is the sound of the chariots of many horses running to battle. Again, this imagery of these locusts. That's what's being described. It's not horses. They're locusts that are arrayed unto war like unto horses, that have this hair like unto the hair of women, that have the teeth like unto the teeth of lions that are gone forth to destroy. And here it's this great multitude, even so much that the fluttering of the wings sounds like a great army of horses rushing forth. This is a strong force. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be able to accomplish its task? There is no question. Breastplates of iron, almost as an invincibility. Mm-hmm. Now, it is a false invincibility. For now, they're allowed to operate. God ultimately is going to be in control. And so, again, there is some deception here, that they appear as invincible.
You remember the Edomites and Obadiah?
Mm-hmm.
They thought they were invincible. We're way up here. You'll never touch us, you know. But God said, I'll bring you down.
And so they have a leader as well, verse 11. The king that is over them, the angel of the bottomless pit. Again, some of this imagery I have a hard time with. Has the star been sent as a messenger of God just to unlock this bottomless pit, and here this king was within it? Is the king the star that fell and unlocked the bottomless pit? I don't have a great deal of certainty there. But here is a king, one that we have over these. Here is a ruler, an angel of the bottomless pit, whose name is... help me again there, Chip. Is it Abaddon?
Abaddon's what
Abaddon.
I said.
Abaddon. I think we have some leniency there. And maybe,
oh, yeah.
Here this name means destruction. Mm-hmm. And also Polion, meaning destroyer. If you don't find the star to be Satan, perhaps that star simply represents this judgment that is going forth with Satan as that leader.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it's the same. But here, this one that I doubt many would question is Satan, this one who is king over this destructive force, this influential force that has spread forth over the face of the earth and has brought this harm, brought this suffering upon these people. And verse 12 simply tells us this one horrible plague is now past, this one woe, this judgment, but there's still two more to come.
Mm-hmm.
Chip, maybe there's something that you want to highlight, go back, something add to in those 12 verses?
Not so much. I'm just I'm seeing, you know, God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And so as he didn't he tell Noah what was coming?
Mm-hmm.
He said, Noah, I'm fixing to send this great, flood upon the earth. He actually told the children of Israel that 70 years of captivity were coming.
Mm-hmm.
And over and again, he has foretold what would be that to come, you know, obviously told of the Christ coming,
mm-hmm.
how he would come and all those. And so here, you know, as we continue to look through our first century goggles, you know, it has to be a reminder of, you know, again, he's showing us those things that are coming. He's showing that there is a point in time when vengeance will be served, mm-hmm. again, because that belongs to God. And so I continue to reflect back to chapter 2 and verse number 10, you know, even in the face of death, even as these horrible things may come upon you, don't renounce the name of Christ, mm-hmm. you know, stay faithful. And so as these images continue to pop up, I thought about Proverbs 13 and verse 15, where it ends with the way of the transgressors is hard. You know, this horribleness that you'll face if you choose this particular path. Mm-hmm. You know, these stings, if you will, these horrible things that you'll deal with. And again, as you came across, I believe it was verse 6, they were looking for death, but death mm-hmm. was not able to be found. You know, so many people, even today, you know, they think that they're at the end of their line. I don't know that I heard the end of the story, but the lawyer here in Dallas that just showed mm-hmm. up dead.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, and certainly I can be corrected on that, but I thought somebody had suggested that it could have been suicide. His daughter had just committed suicide. People put themselves in these horrible situations, and they think that death is the way out.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look to a place like Luke chapter 16, especially about verse 22 or 23 there, you find out that it's even worse,
mm-hmm.
you know, beyond that. And you see torment. Mm-hmm. Is that not the word that's used? Torment. Mm-hmm. I am in torments. And so notice that, you know, they may have thought that that would have been the way out, and they might be wishing for it, and it's not granted to them. But there's no comfort in death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I'm just continuing to see, you know, how, again, like you said, how faithful God is to show us, look, here's what's going to take place, and here's how it's going to happen, and here's what you can expect, but remain faithful,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so this imagery, aren't you reminded maybe of the way that Jesus talked in parables?
Mm-hmm.
Some things, they had to be hidden. They had to be, and they were hidden from some, and they were revealed to others, obviously. But these things, you know, as people today, whether they come into it with their premillennial goggles on or whatever hobby they may have as they enter into the book of Revelation, you have to continue to look at it as you were in the first century. And it's hard to do because I've never ridden a horse to get mm-hmm. to work. I've never, you know, had a grandfather that dealt with a locust plague or something right. like maybe they did. And so all these things mean something to them. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the way that you showed us here this morning is absolutely right. You know, things like breastplates and locusts, and it means something.
Mm-hmm.
And just what it means to them is the way we are to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So one last thing I did notice, and I don't remember if this was maybe Brother Taylor, maybe, but someone pointed out to me that Abaddon and Apollyon only appear here mm-hmm. in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of a neat thing to observe, mm-hmm. just a little factoid or whatever.
Yeah, again, feeding off each other always sparks other thoughts, and I see some of the chat box window going. I certainly appreciate all of that. I certainly have a hard time at times reading and thinking at the same time, and so appreciate those good discussions. But one thought that came to mind when you spoke of death, how many people, again, I would stress that, they don't know what they're wishing for.
Right.
They think it would be a release, and yet their death, if they're outside of Christ, would be worse than what they were currently suffering.
Mm.
And so it was no relief. The other thing I think I would stress as we're going through here, again, looking at all of these individual things, we could get too caught up in what exactly is that star, and what direction did it come from, and where did exactly did it fall, and what did it do with this or that? I would urge us caution in saying that even as I speak of some of these images, there are things that I attach it to and I think about, but I'm not going to be forceful in saying that's what that must mean unless we're specifically told.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that you can still look at the overall picture and say, I'm getting what God is trying to reveal to his people. There is a judgment that is coming upon those who have followed after this wickedness. And we're going to see that, I believe, even again at the end of this chapter, that here are warnings that are going forth. You're suffering because of sin, and yet it's only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so what will the people do with it? We're going to find some of those answers in the last half of this chapter, verse 13, if you will, on down through verse 21.
13 to 21. I have to switch back. I was in another mode there.
Oh,
13.
Okay.
And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, which had the trumpet, loose the four angels, which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour, and a day, and a month, and a year, for to slay the third part of men. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000. And I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions. And out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. By these three was the third part of men killed, by the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails. For their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt. And the rest of them, which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk, neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts.
Mm.
I think you call that stiff-necked.
Yes. we're going to try to leave some time there to talk a little bit more about verse 21. But here, this sixth angel and this sixth trumpet that is sounding forth, it is the second woe of these three. And I have it labeled here the decay of society as they continue in sin. And so going back here to verse 13, he hears a voice from the four horns of the golden altar. Understand here, this is that altar that represented prayers and the prayers of those saints that are going up, even as saints are killed. I think back to that cry of the saints under the altar. How long? Before we are avenged. And so there is continual suffering here that is going on even among the Christians as this sin continues that we've had that picture of in the first 12 verses. And so this is going forth. Those cries are going forth. And now this angel is sounding this voice from the four horns of the golden altar that is before God, and this voice, this, if you will, trumpeting voice, is going to say to that sixth angel that has sounded the trumpet, loose the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates. And so here is a force that has been held back, not the four angels that are at the corners of the earth that are holding back the winds. These are four that are bound at the river Euphrates, possibly here representing God's forces of vengeance. This was a region from whence many of the enemies of Israel came. Assyria would somewhat emanate from that area. Babylon certainly would emanate from that area. Shushan, if I'm not misplacing that, the Medo-Persians is going to be in that general area as well. I may have misplaced that one, but a number of these forces, anyway, that have been against God's people in a very physical sense have come from this area. And possibly they're even a reminder that God can use wicked powers to accomplish his purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Again, think back to Habakkuk. He said, how can you use Babylon? And God says, well, Babylon will do my will, and they will answer for the things that they have done as well. They're going to answer for their sin.
Mm-hmm.
But God can use various forces to accomplish his purposes. If he needs to use the forces of the earth to bring destruction upon the wicked, he certainly can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is calling forth even these four angels from the great river Euphrates, and they were loosed, verse 15, which were prepared. This was their purpose. Mm-hmm. They were prepared for this hour, this day, this month, this year. Now, the locusts were stayed from killing men, but these four are released, and notice it says to slay a third part of men.
Mm-hmm.
Galatians 4:4, Jesus came forth in the fullness of time. This is the fullness of time, in a sense, for these four that are now being released. It is according to the time that God had determined, and they were going to go forth and kill a third part of man. Again, it represents to us a limitation. He's not going forth to wipe out everyone. You're also going to notice here the increasing nature of these trumpets. Things are getting worse. They're intensifying. In many ways, God is using these judgments to warn of a greater judgment that's to come. You've suffered upon the face of the earth and longed for death and couldn't find it. The next one comes here, and here a third part of men are going to die. But there's something that's worse. You think this is bad. You think you can't live with this and are searching for death. There's coming a time in which there's an even greater judgment that is coming if you don't change your ways. And so that greater judgment would be coming. This army that's going to go forth is vast. Once again, verse 16, the number of the army of the horsemen. And so again, the four angels that are bound in the great river Euphrates, but the four angels that are leaders, as it were, of this great army. Verse 16, the number of them were 200,000. If we haven't missed that, that's a punishing force of 2 million that are spreading forth, an army that's going forth to accomplish God's will. Again, that's going to help remind us this is a vision, a symbolic representation of things that are going to happen, a force that is going to be united in their mission to do God's will. And look again, I heard the number of them, this great army that's going forth. Verse 17, I saw the horses in the vision and those that sat on them, and they had breastplates of fire and I struggle with some of these words, jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as heads of lion, and out of their mouth fire and smoke and brimstone. It's a dreadful image that's before us, but it's also an image that reminds me they are well-equipped. Well-equipped to pour out God's wrath on society, on those who are continuing in their wickedness. And so strength and fierceness and those thoughts are what comes to mind with those descriptions. And by these three was the third part of men killed. And so this great destructive force that is going forth, even with plagues, the third part of men killed by fire, by smoke, and by the brimstone that issued out of their mouths. And their power is in their mouth and in their tails, because even their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt. And so tails, even they could bite as a serpent, both the head and the tail inflicting wounds that are going forth to now bring destruction. And it's only a sample of what's to come. I think that's even the terrifying image there. It's bad enough to consider what's going forth, this force going forth into the world that now does have the power to bring death, that is sent forth to kill, as it's described, the third part of man, at least a description there of going forth and killing a part, not the whole, of man. But here is the amazing statement to me, and all of that, it's verse 20 and 21. You see that great destruction that's coming. God has unloosed that. He has allowed that force now to go forth and even bring destruction as that second woe. They're building up. And it says, verse 20, but the rest of the men that were not killed, those who were still alive, those who were not killed by these plagues, repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils, the idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and wood, and which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Neither they repented of their murders, their sorceries, their fornication, or their thefts. Here's the image that's before us. You're facing all this death, all this destruction. You're facing these woes. You're facing these judgments. And yet, even in the face of those judgments and ones that are worse to come, You still will not repent. There's still a final judgment that you're going to be separated from God if you are outside of Christ, and yet you have continued in your idolatries, in these false gods that can't even move themselves about or see or do anything, that can't defend you, can't protect you, and yet you keep serving them. You continue in your wickedness and in your sin, even in the face of those judgments that you have seen, and you refuse to repent. And so God has showed his power, but instead of turning, they have continued in their wickedness. And again, I would describe it much as sometimes we look in our society. It is crumbling as men refuse to turn back to God. They would rather continue in their wickedness and in their sin than to heed these warnings. And, you know, one thought that came to my mind is there, I think we have to be careful. We don't have divine revelation that tells us, you know, someone will come forth and says, oh, Hurricane Katrina was God's judgment upon those wicked that were living. I think that was the one that hit Katrina a number of, Louisiana, New Orleans area a few years ago. And it was a decry against those things. I can't pinpoint and say that's exactly what God was doing. I do think what we can do is look at death in such a natural force such as that. I do think you can look at the death of a loved one. You can look at challenging circumstances, maybe close calls in your own life, and see it as an opportunity. I, in a sense, saw death. I saw what is to come. I saw the brevity of life. And I need to consider my life. And yet we have many that are like these. They've seen the judgment of God, and they refuse to repent. What do we do with those things that happen around us? Well, when we're challenged and we see that fatality wreck that we maybe missed by just a few seconds, we're just behind or just ahead of, when we have lost that loved one to cancer, or when we have lost that loved one to the drunk driver, and we realize how quickly life can pass and change, and does it cause us to reflect and to think on our lives? Here, death is now occurring, and yet those who were against God still refuse to repent of their sin. And so I see a lesson not only in that day, I see a great warning even to us in our time. And Chip, let me turn it back. Maybe you have anything out of those verses there that you want to go back and highlight or have a little different perspective on.
Only one thing that, again, me and my imagery, where I was reading about the 200,000, it was suggested by one particular author that maybe that was, you know, 200 million. If that was true, and, you know, don't know that it is, think of the mass that this would have been in imagery. And this particular author said this mass would have appeared as something that was 1 mile wide and 85 miles long. I mean, just an idea like that, for someone to throw that out there, for me to observe, it really, you know, causes me to think of that innumerable host, myriads of people, you know, maybe even as it was with the in the coast of the Gadarenes, that legion, you know, many. Anyway, a lot of those things come to my mind, and I think about the vividness of the scene that's being unfolded in front. You mentioned Habakkuk earlier, and even their horses, the Chaldeans' horses, were mentioned. The swiftness, the terror that would bring before your eyes. Movie producers have been able to produce that, you know, in such a way that, you know, we're horrified to see these horses that are dressed for battle, to do war. And so a lot of that stands out to me. But again, the place that you have to go is the last two verses, like you see. And you remember Jesus dealt with this on a regular basis. And even as we referenced earlier, you know, you stiff-necked and uncircumcised and hardened ears, you do always resist the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. As your fathers did, you know, so do you. And so these people were in, you know, I don't know, you see something like a bomb go off next to you,
mm-hmm.
and you don't run? You know, I'd be running, you know. And so that's the idea I see, you know, the death all around you, and you don't have any need to change. Mm-hmm. I thought also about these dumb idols, as it were, mm-hmm. and I couldn't place my finger on it. Was it Rachel that loaded up her daddy's idols and, mm-hmm. and sat on them or whatever, right. had them on, you know, and I think it was Brother Bland, perhaps, and he made some comment like, let me tell you something, if you can pack up your gods in a saddlebag and take them with you, I guarantee you they're not going to do anything for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, just something to consider. Here they're worshiping all of these horrible things, but it was the same, you know. Joshua talked about that before crossing the river, you know, choose you this day what you're going to do, you know, whether you're going to serve those idols back then or those idols in the land here, at the foot of Sinai, for crying out loud, with all the thunderings and the lightnings going on above as the law was being received. They're down there making a golden calf.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This brought us out of Egypt. So it's a problem that's been dealt with for, again, ages and ages. But here, we're reminded of it again. People are still doing it, you mm-hmm. know, and we see it in our all around us today. You know, people worshiping the lawnmower god on Sundays, or worshiping the golf cart god on Sundays, or the NASCAR god or whatever. People are still doing the same thing. They're falling before these dumb idols mm-hmm. that can do nothing for you. And there's going to be a judgment for that in the last day. And so, you know, I appreciate all the things that you suggested and showed us this morning. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around the idea of being in the first century and mm-hmm. having this read to me in an assembly for the very first time. And it's mm-hmm. just an amazing thing to behold.
And that's one thing, you know, I think at times we miss and certainly need to do. If you're in the habit of only maybe doing a daily Bible study program where you read a specified number of chapters or whatever, challenge yourself sometime mm-hmm. to sit down and read these letters, whether it's the epistles, whether it's the book of Revelation, whether it's the gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Try to sit down and read them in one sitting mm-hmm. as they were. I mean, here is a letter that's yeah. being sent, and they would have sat down and read it and looked into it. And sometimes that gives us a little broader scope. When we get down and we start studying verse by verse, sometimes we miss some of the broader picture of what's going on. And so certainly, and I think a warning to us there again in chapter 9 that we need to look at this, as Chip has mentioned a number of times, those first century goggles or glasses. But there's still lessons, even though these were events that were coming to pass, and I think we can look at them in those, you know, the first, second century as how they were going to unfold. Nevertheless, there's still powerful lessons that we need to learn from today, and I think that verse 20 and 21 are some of my highlights of the book of Revelation, to stop and think, all these things were coming to pass, and they refused to listen. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a third woe coming. And it's going to be worse, as I believe we begin pointing to the final judgment. I hope you can join us tomorrow, Lord willing, Chip, and we'll be looking at
an interlude.
Revelation 10. That's
tomorrow.
Right. Have an interlude. We won't come back and mention the third woe until Revelation 11 and verse 14. And so we kind of, again, that's what John's dealing with, these cuts, as it were, jump cuts almost, that we're watching this, we're looking at what happened, we jump over and we see something else, and then we kind of cut back and pick up where we were, and there's some of those that are occurring here. And so hope you can join us tomorrow. There again, we'll be in Revelation chapter 10, and we'll look forward to our continued study. But think of those lessons that we need to be learning and be challenged by even today as we look through these things. And certainly, will we look at ourselves, will we examine ourselves, even in the light of judgment that is to come.
We appreciate everybody in the chat box, too, bro. We got Chris and Sean and Miss Ann and Jody and probably even your good mother-in-law's in there. We just don't see her, but appreciate all y'all and your activity today.
Yes, yes, and always appreciate those good comments and that's going on. If you haven't been a part of that, log into the website at thegospelradionetwork.org, tgrn.org. When you click that big Listen Live button, scroll down, put a name, some kind of identifier there, and just click enter. You'll be in there and can chat along with the others and add to that discussion and be benefited yourself. And so we thank those who have joined us in multiple ways and hope that you all have a great day.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.